welcome to the 35th session of Mantra Yoga. We'll continue with our journey into the depths of Mantra Yoga with the new series Perfection of Yoga, second part by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. But before that, let's prepare ourselves and pray. Please make use of the following guidelines to optimize your receptivity and derive maximum benefit from this session. Dedicate the next 40 to 50 minutes exclusively for this purpose. If you have children or pets who might interrupt you, please ensure that they are taken care of for the duration of the session. Please turn off your cell phone and avoid texting or checking it during the session. Please sit with your hands on your knees, palms open, facing upwards with your spine comfortably erect, and close your eyes. Take a deep breath, and as you exhale, relax into this exhalation. Take one more deep breath, and as you exhale, relax even more into this exhalation. Take another deep breath, and as you exhale, relax completely into this one. Now, please put your hands together in prayer and close your eyes. Repeat after me. Swasti astu Vishvasya Kala Prasiddhatam Dayantu Bhutani Shivam Mito Dhiya Namaschah Bhadram Bhajatad Adokshaje Avishyatam No Matir Api Ahituki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing Mantra Yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence and always remain in His thought.
The Perfection of Yoga. Chapter 4. Yoga as Body and Mind Control. Throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was encouraging Arjuna to fight, for he was a warrior, and fighting was his duty. Although Krishna delineates the meditational yoga system in the 6th chapter, he does not stress it or encourage Arjuna to pursue it as his path. Krishna admits that this meditational process is very difficult. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Asamshayam Mahabaho Mano Durnigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya Vairagyena Chagrihyate. The Blessed Lord said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by constant practice and by detachment. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 35. Here Krishna emphasizes practice and renunciation as ways to control the mind. But what is that renunciation? Today it is hardly possible for us to renounce anything, for we are so habituated to such a variety of material sense pleasures. Despite leading a life of uncontrolled sense indulgence, we attend yoga classes and expect to attain success. There are so many rules and regulations involved in the proper execution of yoga. And most of us can hardly give up a simple habit like smoking. In his discourse on the meditational yoga system, Krishna proclaims that yoga cannot be properly performed by one who eats too much or eats too little. One who starves himself cannot properly perform yoga, nor can the person who eats more than required. the eating process should be moderate, just enough to keep body and soul together. It should not be for the enjoyment of the tongue. When palatable dishes come before us, we are accustomed to take not just one of the preparations, but two, three, and four, and upwards. Our tongue is never satisfied. But it is not unusual in India to see a yogi take only a small spoonful of rice a day and nothing more. Nor can one execute the meditational yoga system if one sleeps too much or does not sleep sufficiently. Krishna does not say that there is such a thing as dreamless sleep. As soon as we go to sleep, we will have a dream, although we may not remember it. In the Gita, Krishna cautions that one who dreams too much while sleeping cannot properly execute yoga. One should not sleep more than 6 hours daily, nor can one infected by insomnia who cannot sleep at night successfully execute yoga, for the body must be kept fit. Thus, Krishna outlines so many requirements for disciplining the body. All these requirements, however, can essentially be broken down into four basic rules. No illicit sexual connection, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. These are the four minimum regulations for the execution of any yoga system. And in this age, who can refrain from these activities? We have to test ourselves accordingly to ascertain our success in yoga execution. Yogi yunjita satatam atmanam rahasi sthitah ekaki yat chittatma nirashir aparigrahah. A transcendentalist should always try to concentrate his mind on the Supreme Self. He should not live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 10. From this verse, we can understand that it is the duty of the yogi to always remain alone. Meditational yoga cannot be performed in an assembly, at least not according to Bhagavad Gita. In the meditational system, it is not possible to concentrate the mind upon the super soul except in a secluded place. In India, there are still many yogis who assemble at the Kumbh Mela. Generally, they are in seclusion, but on rare occasions, they come to attend special functions. In India, there are still thousands of yogis and sages, and every 12 years or so, they meet in particular holy places, Allahabad, etc. Just as in America, they have businessmen's conventions. The yogi, in addition to living in a secluded place, should also be free from desires and should not think that he is performing yoga to achieve some material powers. Nor should he accept gifts or favors from people. If he is properly executing this meditational yoga, he stays alone in the jungles, forests, or mountains and avoids society altogether. At all times, he must be convinced for whom he has become a yogi. He does not consider himself alone because at all times the Paramatma, Super Soul, is with him. From this, we can see that in modern civilization, it is indeed very difficult to execute this meditational form of yoga properly. Contemporary civilization in this age of Kali has actually made it impossible for us to be alone, to be desireless, and to be possessionless. The method of executing meditational yoga is further explained in considerable detail by Krishna to Arjuna. Shri Krishna says, Shuchau deshe pratishthapya sthiram asanam atmanah natya uchritam nati nicham chailajina kushottaram tatra ekagram manah kritva yata chittendriya kriyah. upavishyasane yunjyad yogam atma vishuddhaye. To practice yoga, one should go to a secluded place and should lay kusha grass on the ground and then cover it with a deer skin and a soft cloth. The seat should be neither too high nor too low and should be situated in a sacred place. The yogi should then sit on it very firmly and should practice yoga by controlling the mind and the senses, purifying the heart and fixing the mind on one point. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 11 and 12. Generally, yogis sit on tiger skin or deer skin because reptiles will not crawl on such skins to disturb their meditations. It seems that in God's creation, there is a use for everything. Every grass and herb has its use and serves some function, although we may not know what it is. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has made some provision whereby the yogi doesn't have to worry about snakes. Having acquired a good sitting place in a secluded environment, the yogi begins to purify the Atma, body, mind and soul. The yogi should not think, now I will try to achieve some wonderful powers. Sometimes yogi do attain certain siddhis or powers, but these are not the purpose of yoga, and real yogis do not exhibit them. The real yogi thinks, I am now contaminated by this material atmosphere, so now I must purify myself. We can quickly see that controlling the mind and body is not such an easy thing, that we cannot control them as easily as we can go to the store and purchase something. But Krishna indicates that these rules can be easily followed when we are in Krishna consciousness. Of course, everyone is motivated by sex life, but sex life is not actually discouraged. We have this material body, and as long as we have it, sex desire will be there. Similarly, as long as we have the body, we must eat to maintain it, and we must sleep in order to give it rest. We cannot expect to negate these activities, but the Vedic literatures do give us guidelines for regulation in eating, sleeping, mating, etc. If we at all expect success in the yoga system, we cannot allow our unbridled senses to take us down the paths of sense objects. Therefore, guidelines are set up. Lord Shri Krishna is advising that the mind can be controlled through regulation. If we do not regulate our activities, our mind will be more and more agitated. It is not that activities are to be stopped, but regulated by the mind always engaged in Krishna consciousness. Being always engaged in some activity connected with Krishna is actual samadhi. It is not that when one is in samadhi, he doesn't eat, work, sleep, or enjoy himself in any way. Rather, samadhi can be defined as executing regulated activities while absorbed in the thought of Krishna. Asamyatatmana yogo dushprapa iti te me matihi vashyatmana tu yatata shakyo vaptum upayataha. For one whose mind is unbridled, Krishna further says, self-realization is difficult work. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 36. Anyone knows that an unbridled horse is dangerous to ride. He can go in any direction at any speed, and his rider is likely to come to some harm. Insofar as the mind is unbridled, Krishna agrees with Arjuna that the yoga system is very difficult work indeed. But Krishna adds, he whose mind is controlled and strives by right means is assured of success. That is my judgment. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 36. What is meant by strives by right means? One has to try to follow the four basic regulative principles as mentioned and execute his activities absorbed in Krishna consciousness. If one wants to engage in yoga at home, then he has to make certain that his other engagements are moderate. He cannot spend long hours of the day working hard to simply earn a livelihood. One should work very moderately, eat very moderately, gratify the senses very moderately, and keep his life as free from anxiety as possible. In this way, practice of yoga may be successful. What is the sign by which we can tell that one has attained perfection in yoga? Krishna indicates that one is situated in yoga when his consciousness is completely under his control. Yada viniyatam chittam atmanyevavatishthate nispraha sarva kamebhyo yukta ityuchyate tada. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to have attained yoga. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 18. One who has attained yoga is not dependent on the dictations of his mind. Rather, the mind comes under his control. Nor is the mind put out or extinguished, for it is the business of the yogi to think of Krishna or Vishnu always. The yogi cannot allow his mind to go out. This may sound very difficult, but it is possible in Krishna consciousness. When one is always engaged in Krishna consciousness, in the service of Krishna, then how is it possible for the mind to wander away from Krishna? In the service of Krishna, the mind is automatically controlled. Nor should the yogi have any desire for material sense gratification. If one is in Krishna consciousness, he has no desire other than Krishna. It is not possible to become desireless. The desire for sense gratification must be overcome by the process of purification. But desire for Krishna should be cultivated. It is simply that we have to transfer the desire. There is no question of killing desire, for desire is the constant companion of the living entity. Krishna consciousness is the process by which one purifies his desires. Instead of desiring so many things for sense gratification, one simply desires things for the service of Krishna. For example, we may desire palatable food, but instead of preparing foodstuffs for ourselves, we can prepare them for Krishna and offer them to him. It is not that the action is different, but there is a transfer of consciousness from thinking of acting for my senses to thinking of acting for Krishna. We may prepare nice milk products, vegetables, grains, fruits, and other vegetarian dishes for Krishna, and then offer them to him, praying, "This material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. It is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world. Therefore, Sri Krishna has given us this nice prasad, spiritual food, to conquer the tongue. So let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify their lordships, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and in love, call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu." In this way, our karma is sacrificed. For from the very beginning, we are thinking that the food is being offered to Krishna. We should have no personal desires for the food. Krishna is so merciful, however, that he gives us the food to eat. In this way, our desire is fulfilled. When one has molded his life in such a way, dovetailing his desires to Krishna's, then it is to be understood that he has attained perfection in yoga. Simply breathing deeply and doing some exercises is not yoga as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned. A whole purification of consciousness is required. In the execution of yoga, it is very important that the mind is not agitated. Yatha dipo nivatastho ningate sopama smrita yogino yat chittasya yunjato yogamatmanaha. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist, whose mind is controlled, remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. Bhagavad Gita chapter number 6, verse number 19. When a candle is in a windless place, its flame remains straight and does not waver. The mind, like the flame, is susceptible to so many material desires that with the slightest agitation, it will move. A little movement of the mind can change the whole consciousness. Therefore, in India, one seriously practicing yoga traditionally remained brahmachari or celibate. There are two kinds of brahmachari. One is completely celibate and the other is grihastha brahmachari. That is to say, he has a wife, he does not associate with any other woman, and his relations with his own wife are strictly regulated. In this way, either by complete celibacy or restricted sex life, one's mind is kept from being agitated. Yet, when one takes a vow to remain a complete celibate, his mind may still be agitated by sexual desires. Therefore, in India, those practicing the traditional yoga under strict vows of celibacy are not allowed to sit alone even with a mother, sister, or daughter. The mind is so fickle that the slightest suggestion can create havoc. The yogi should have his mind trained in such a way that as soon as his mind wanders from meditation on Vishnu, he drags it back again. This requires a great deal of practice. One must come to know that his real happiness is in experiencing the pleasure of his transcendental senses, not the material senses. Senses are not to be sacrificed, and desires are not to be sacrificed. But there are both desires and sense satisfaction in the spiritual sphere. Real happiness is transcendental to material, sensual experience. If one is not convinced of this, he will surely be agitated and will fall down. One should therefore know that the happiness he is trying to derive from material senses is not really happiness. Those who are actually yogis truly enjoy. But how do they enjoy? Ramante yogino anante. Their enjoyment is unlimited. That unlimited enjoyment is real happiness. And such happiness is spiritual, not material. This is the real meaning of Rama. As in the chant Hare Rama, Rama means enjoyment through spiritual life. Spiritual life is all pleasure, and Krishna is all pleasure. We do not have to sacrifice pleasure, but we do have to enjoy it properly. A diseased man cannot enjoy life. His enjoyment of life is a false enjoyment. But when he is cured and is healthy, then he is able to enjoy. Similarly, as long as we are in the material conception of life, we are not actually enjoying ourselves, but are simply becoming more and more entangled in material nature. If a sick man is not supposed to eat, his eating unrestrictedly actually kills him. Similarly, the more we increase material enjoyment, the more we become entangled in this world, and the more difficult it becomes to get free from the material entrapment. All of the systems of yoga are meant to disentangle the conditioned soul from this entrapment, to transfer him from the false enjoyment of material things to the actual enjoyment of Krishna consciousness. Shri Krishna says, Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chevatmanatmanam pashyan atmani tushyati sukham atyantikam yattad buddhi grahyam atindriyam veti yatra na chevayam sthitashchalati tattvatah yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tatah yasmin sthito na dukhena gurunapi vichalyate tam vidya dukha samyoga viyogam yoga samyitam. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joy state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Bhagavad Gita chapter number 6, verse number 20 to 23. One form of yoga may be difficult and another may be easy, but in all cases, one must purify his existence to the conception of Krishna conscious enjoyment. Then one will be happy. Yada hi nendriyartheshu na karma svanu sajjate sarva sankalpa sanyasi yoga rudhasta dochyate uddhare dātmanātmānam nātmānam avasādayet ātmaeva hi ātmano banduhu ātmaeva ripurātmanah. A person is said to have attained to yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. A man must elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 4 and 5. We have to raise ourselves to the spiritual standard by ourselves. In this sense, I am my own friend and I am my own enemy. The opportunity is ours. There is a very nice verse by Chanakya Pandit. No one is anyone's friend. No one is anyone's enemy. It is only by behavior that one can understand who is his friend and who is his enemy. No one is born our enemy and no one is born our friend. These roles are determined by mutual behavior. As we have dealings with others in ordinary affairs, in the same way the individual has dealings with himself. I may act as my own friend or as my own enemy. As a friend, I can understand my position as a spirit soul, and seeing that somehow or other I have come into contact with material nature, try to get free from material entanglement by acting in such a way as to disentangle myself. In this case, I am my friend. But if even after getting this opportunity, I do not take it, then I should be considered my own worst enemy. Bandhur atmatmanastasya yenatmevatmanajitaha anatmanastu shatrutve varte tatmeva shatruvat. For he who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his very mind will be the greatest enemy. Bhagavad Gita chapter number 6, verse number 6. How is it possible for one to become his own friend? This is explained here. Atma means mind, body and soul. When we speak of Atma, in so far as we are in the bodily conception, we refer to the body. However, when we transcend the bodily conception and rise to the mental platform, Atma refers to the mind. But actually, when we are situated on the truly spiritual platform, then Atma refers to the soul. In actuality, we are pure spirit. In this way, according to one's spiritual development, the meaning of the word Atma differs. As far as the Nirukti Vedic dictionary is concerned, Atma refers to body, mind and soul. However, in this verse of Bhagavad Gita, Atma refers to mind. If through yoga the mind can be trained, then the mind is our friend. But if the mind is left untrained, then there is no possibility of leading a successful life. For one who has no idea of a spiritual life, the mind is the enemy. If one thinks that he is simply the body, his mind will not be working for his benefit. It will simply be acting to serve the gross body and to further condition the living entity and entrap him in material nature. If, however, one understands one's position as a spirit soul apart from the body, the mind can be a liberating factor. In itself, the mind has nothing to do. It is simply waiting to be trained. And it is best trained through association. Desire is the function of the mind, and one desires according to his association. So if the mind is to act as friend, there must be good association. The best association is a sadhu, that is, a Krishna conscious person or one who is striving for a spiritual realization. There are those who are striving for temporary things, asat. Matter and the body are temporary. And if one only engages himself for bodily pleasure, he is conditioned by temporary things. But if he engages himself in self-realization, then he is engaged in something permanent, sat. Obviously, if one is intelligent, he will associate with those who are trying to elevate themselves to the platform of self-realization through one of the various forms of yoga. The result will be that those who are sadhu or realized will be able to sever his attachment to material association. This is the great advantage of good association. For instance, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna just to cut off his attachment to this material affection. Because Arjuna is attracted to things that are impending the execution of his own duty, Krishna severs these things. To cut something, a sharp instrument is required. And to cut the mind from its attachments, sharp words are often required. The sadhu or teacher shows no mercy in using sharp words to sever the student's mind and material from material attractions. By speaking the truth uncompromisingly, he is able to sever the bondage. For example, at the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks sharply to Arjuna by telling him that although he speaks like a learned man, he is actually fool number one. If we actually want detachment from this material world, we should be prepared to accept such cutting words from the spiritual master. Compromise and flattery have no effect where strong words are required. In Bhagavad Gita, the material conception of life is condemned in so many places. One who thinks the country in which he is born is worshipable, or one who goes to holy places and yet ignores the sadhus there, is likened unto an ass. As an enemy is always thinking of doing harm, so the untrained mind will drag one deeper and deeper into material entanglement. Conditioned souls struggle very hard with the mind and with the other senses. Since the mind directs the other senses, it is of utmost importance to make the mind the friend. Jitatmana prashantasya paramatma samahitah shitoshna sukhadukheshu tatha manapamanayoho. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, verse number 7. By training the mind, one actually attains tranquility. For the mind is always dragging us over non-permanent things. Just as an unbridled horse will pull a chariot on a perilous course. Although we are permanent and eternal, somehow or other we have become attracted to non-permanent things. But the mind can be easily trained if it is simply fixed on Krishna. Just as a fort is safe when it is defended by a great general, If Krishna is placed in the fort of the mind, there will be no possibility of the enemies entering. Material education, wealth, and power will not help one to control the mind. A great devotee prays, "When will I be able to think of you constantly? My mind is always dragging me about. But as soon as I am able to fix my mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, it becomes clear." When the mind is clear, it is possible to meditate on the Supersoul. The Paramatma, or the Supersoul, is always seated within heart along with the individual soul. The yoga system involves concentrating the mind and focusing it on the Paramatma or Supersoul seated within the heart. The previously quoted verse from Bhagavad Gita indicates that one who has conquered the mind and has overcome all attachment to non-permanent things can be absorbed in thought of the Paramatma. One so absorbed becomes free from all duality and false designations.
So we'll do some practical meditations from here. Remember, meditation is a simple technique. Almost anyone can enjoy and can do it. What you need to do is simply sit quietly and comfortably in a relaxed and steady position. Still the body, make the breathing process serene, that is calm, deep, without check, and then allow the mind to become quiet and focused. Simply allow your eyes to close, but don't squeeze them shut or create any pressure on your eyes. Simply let all your facial muscles relax. Your mouth should also be gently closed without any tension in the jaw. All breathing is done through the nostrils. Your shoulders and arms should be relaxed and allowed to rest gently on your knees. Your arms should be so completely relaxed that if someone who wishes to pick up your hand, your arms would be limp. You can gently join the thumb and index finger in a position called finger lock. This mudra or gesture creates a circle which you can think of symbolically as a small circle that recycles the energy within. If you can sit on the floor with your legs crossed like kids in the candy, well and good. Or sit on a chair, but make sure you are comfortable with your feet flat on the floor and your hands resting gently on your thighs. Your palms are facing up. This posture allows you to begin the process of meditation without creating any difficulty for the body. In a moment, we shall begin practical mantra yoga. And let us remind ourselves that for the next 30 minutes so, all we will do is sitting and softly chanting or singing. From time to time, our mind will wander away. And this is completely fine. What we shall do is gently guide the mind back into the sound. Concentrate, listen to your voice, sound of the mantra, and continue chanting or singing as the situation is. And now we'll begin to recite the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now please repeat after me. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now let's do it together. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Krishna.